Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today, I got a really cool interview planned. A bunch of people are up in here from the Chicago soul group, the Green Berets. So they're shuffling around right now. So you guys, we're going to be playing their music, and they actually recorded as several different groups, and they have an interesting story. So you should keep tuned. So first of all, you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Hi, everybody. I'm Clifford T. Frazier.
Hi, everybody. I'm Walt Smith.
Hey, this is Keith Donaldson here.
This is Brad Donaldson.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks so much for coming to the studio.
Thank you for having us in.
So I guess the story of the group, there were sorts of two sets of people meeting one other guy who was in another group initially.
Yeah.
So let's start off with the four guys who were singing together first.
Okay.
So what area are you guys all from?
Southside.
What specific area, like what streets?
55th Street, 55th and LaSalle, which was a block away from the Dan Ryan Expressway.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you all lived around like the same few blocks?
Yeah.
They did.
We lived back to back. I lived on Wentworth and they lived on LaSalle. Right. They were like, I could look in their kitchen.
And it was three brothers, is that right?
Yeah.
What were the names of the three brothers?
Well, I was the oldest. My name is Brad. I was the oldest, and Keith. Jesus. And my brother David, he passed about 2 years ago.
Yeah, David Dawson.
God rest his soul.
And how did you guys first get involved with music?
Oh,
that's a good question.
Your dad was a singer.
My dad was a singer. We sang. My grandfather had a church. We, you know, like most guys coming up, we sang in the choir. Mm-hmm. And I started singing when I was like 6 years old.
Okay.
You know, and I listened to jazz. My dad loved jazz. We listened to jazz. My mom used to listen to Johnny Mathis records.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
we used to listen to Ahmed Jamal on the piano.
Earl Garner.
Earl Garner.
He's in the Brook Bend, too?
Yeah. So we've always had an ear. I've always had an ear.
Everybody
music. Was your dad a professional musician?
Yeah, he sang in
the
group.
What was the group he sang in?
What was the group?
The Clefts. The Clefts.
Okay. The gospel group?
No.
Oh, just
No, it was a soul group.
Did they record?
I don't think so. No.
They were a working band.
Working group.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and is that also how you got started, Cliff, in the church?
Well, my mom was, she sang background for Sam Cooke.
Okay.
And I was a church baby. She took me everywhere she went. See, she only sang that when he was doing gospel, and after he went secular, she stopped, and I just kept on singing. I just never stopped. You know, I was always there, listening and singing, and then when I moved on the block where the Donaldsons were, they were sitting on the porch singing, and I just joined in.
So what year did you run into those guys? Like, what year did you move to the neighborhood?
I moved there about 63.
Okay.
And there was this crazy guy named Cleotis. He was my protector and my bodyguard. And, you know, just because I knew him, I was safe. And I could go practically anywhere in the block and say, oh, don't mess with him. He knows Cleotis quite well. Mm-hmm. And so then I started hanging out with Brad and Keith and Dave, and we just started singing.
Yeah. And were you in high school at that point?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just going in.
Just going in.
Yeah.
Did you guys all go to the same school?
Me and Brad went to Tilden.
I went to Tilden. Clifton.
I went to Lindblom with Phil Davis and Bradley Bobo. That's how I met the Notations.
Okay, so you guys originally started singing together, and previously you had all sung gospel music, but you were singing like secular music at that time, right? You were singing.
We all just had different, but you know, singing before we got together.
Yeah,
you know,
we were all
I lived on the north side. I was raised in Green Bay on the north side, and when I was growing up, you know, everybody in the projects had a group singing in the hallway.
Yeah. Okay,
you know,
in the hallway.
It's just a prerequisite for that, you know.
Yeah, like I want to get to their part of the story and then ask, because you have a whole backstory too.
Oh, yeah.
So their backstory is you guys all lived in the same neighborhood. You started singing together in around 63,
yeah.
And you were just starting high school.
Mm-hmm.
And what types of local groups inspired you, and what types of music were you singing?
Impressions.
Oh, I hit all the
Five Stairs. Steps.
Temptation.
Fidel. Yeah.
We love Fidel.
Yeah.
Were there any groups from your neighborhood that you remember?
Who did we have in the neighborhood?
But us.
We were the group.
Okay.
That was us. Yeah.
So what was the? So you originally came together and formed a group of four guys. Is that right?
Yeah, we called ourselves the Four Gents.
Four Gents.
It was four of us. We were the Four Gents, and we did all the Purvis Fans talent shows over at, what was that, Club DeLisa?
Club DeLisa.
Club DeLisa. Yeah.
So you started doing talent shows, and you hadn't recorded anything. You were just...
Just singing, trying to find our niche.
Yeah.
What types of stuff did you sing at the talent shows?
Whatever was on the radio. We did Five Star Step. We did Temptation. We did whatever was out.
Misty. That was like one of our best songs.
Yeah. Misty.
So then how long...
Fantasy.
The World of Fantasy. Okay.
Yeah.
And how long were you together before you met Walter?
At least three years.
We had just started getting to high school when I met him.
We kind of gravitated.
Frank Akins, group. Ed Harris, James Quillen, neighborhood musicians. You know, everybody had a neighborhood garage band, and those were musicians.
Yeah.
And Joe Robinson. No one forget Joe. Yeah, he played the band.
Yeah.
So you're saying you were the Four Gents, and you had a band to play with you?
Yeah.
Okay, and then you met Walter after a few years, so let's get to Walter's backstory. Mm-hmm. So you guys are from the south side, but Walter was from the north side, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you said you were from Cabrini Green?
Mm-hmm.
And you actually had sang in another group, right?
Yeah, the Admirations.
And you sang lead in the Admirations?
Uh-huh.
So you're the guy singing lead on Wait Till I Get to Know You?
Yeah, me and guy Ralph Charles, both of us doing a duet on that.
Okay, which, by the way, the most requested song on this station, on this show, at least.
Plan for.
You're on the air all the time.
Everybody wants the Pookas. We're going to start singing again.
That's right.
So you were on, the Admirations cut four records, but you were saying you were on two of them.
Three.
Oh, you were on three of the records?
Mm-hmm.
You're on three of the songs, you mean?
Yeah.
But two of the 45s.
Don't Leave Me, You Remember, Which I Get to Know You and All For You.
Okay, so you were on the two wonderful 45s.
Yeah, because me and Ralph wrote both sides of Which I Get to Know You and All For You. We wrote both of those.
Yeah, I'd like to have you up in here maybe with Ralph or some of the other people to do a whole Admirations interview too.
Sure.
But basically, how old were you when you were singing with the Admirations?
We recorded the first record, I was 13 years old.
Okay.
I just started high school.
And you just knew them because they lived in Cabrini Green also.
Yeah, they lived like right across the way from me. And, you know, like I say, everybody had groups. And then, but I was singing with another group, little group in town, you know, around the area. And then, so they heard me. You know,
what was the other group?
I think we were the Three Dukes.
Okay.
I mean, it was something like that, you know. Because it's for a hot minute, you know. Because one of the guys moved out of town. And another one, he moved across town. So it was just me. Then they heard about it. Hey, well, you blah, blah, sing, you know. So we, you know, I went and sung a few things with him, and after that, it was, you know, done deal. We just started doing our routines and stuff. We met a manager, and we did a show to Regal, and when we did our routines in the basement, you know, it was really, I had never done this before. We did our routines blindfolded after we learned them for a while.
You're talking about the Admirations routines?
Yeah, okay. We did them blindfolded before, because we was practicing to get ready to do a Regal.
Okay.
And when we did it, it really scared us.
Okay.
Because we didn't believe it could go off that smooth.
So how did you end up, you ended up leaving the Admirations?
Well, I won't say I left them, they left me.
Okay.
Because me and the manager, you know, we saw things a little different than they did, you know.
Okay, so there was some dispute and then you left.
Yeah.
So then how did you end up meeting the four dudes, or four gents?
Well, I met Brad in the little side of restaurant that we, you know, was right by Tilden High School. And then his other brother, David, he was in my business class. And he used to always chomp my ear off, "Whoa, I got this group, my brothers. Oh, man, they can woo-woo-woo sing. Yeah, whatever, man." You know, he's a little freshman. Like, get away from there, you know. Yeah. So I got tired of him talking. I said, "Okay, man, come on." So then we went and I heard him sing. I was like, "Okay, these guys can go, boom, 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 no problem."
So you were from the north side, but they were from the south side, but you all went to the same high school.
Mm-hmm.
Where was Tilden?
47th and Union. 47 South Union.
Tilden Blue Devils, baby!
That's right.
how come you weren't at a north side high school?
Well, see, at that time, they had just started that where you didn't necessarily have to go to school in your district.
Right.
So I said, I'm going to go to Tilden. You know, me and a few friends of mine live on the north side. We went to school there, you know.
You take the bus on the way down?
Mm-hmm. Ale. I take the Ale on Chicago Avenue. Get off 47th Street, get 47th Street bus down to Union, get off, walk to school.
So they knew that you had previously sang in the Admirations?
Well, when I was in, they knew about it because, see, everybody knew the record had just come out.
Okay.
Wait till I get to know you, just come out. And so they knew of me, you know. Everybody in the school knew of me. They knew of me real quick before I knew they knew of me.
Okay.
It happened. And at the same time, we was going to school. We had a gig at the Regal, and every day I got out of school, I was going down to the Regal and sing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So were you a little older than the other guys?
No, I was like 13. Ralph may have been 14. King was 15. Bruce might have been 16, you know.
But were you older than the four gents?
Okay. Mm-hmm. All of these three, these guys here, all of them older than me.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
So they were singing together as the four gents for like 3 years before they met you?
Uh-huh.
So were you like juniors in school when you met?
No, we probably like sophomores.
Before that, yeah.
So you guys formed in grammar school, actually.
Yeah.
They did, yeah. Because the record came out, remember, I was a freshman, came out, and then the next year, that's when we kind of like got together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then our manager, Ted, he started taking us and we started recording.
So you came together, so you were originally called the Four Gents, and once you were five guys, did you initially have a name?
A new name. We wanted to capitalize on the admiration. So, but we couldn't use the admiration, so we were Walter and Admiration.
Walter and Admiration.
Then we end up, for some reason, we couldn't do that, so then we got three more names. Society, Velvet Hammer.
So let's talk about Walter and Admiration. So how long were you together before you met your manager, Ted Daniel?
We had been together maybe about a year and a half. Because he met us at a talent show we were doing,
and he was looking for talent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where was the show?
It was at some club, on 55th Street. I want to say
that was Lisa.
I think it was there.
And were you doing talent shows like at nights and weekends while you were in school, pretty much?
Whenever we could,
you know. In those days, when we got together, we started even singing at school. We started doing the talent shows at school.
School talent shows.
Okay.
Whatever we could.
And they didn't want to. They wouldn't even let us. Like, can we go up now? And they, no, y'all got to wait because they saved us for last. You know. Yeah.
Were there any other groups at Tilden that was like your competition at the time?
No. Not a chance.
So you were the main group at Tilden.
We were the group.
We blew
See, because like you know, we I just like I say, it had been a year after I had did this record, and you know they knew of us, so you know we just kept on. You know, it was just like they just came on in and we just kept going.
We did that show with Maurice's sisters.
Oh, man. When
I'm going to make you love me.
In fact, that picture we gave you, we were singing Cloud Nine. Mm-hmm. That, we were doing.
So that was like 669, something like that.
Yeah, Tilden.
Yeah, Tilden.
So you were together for like a year before you met Ted Daniel, mm-hmm. your manager.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You said he met you at a talent show.
No, he was the group of the original Admirations. He's the manager.
Well, he managed the Admiration.
Yeah, and me and he asked, he said, Walt, I need you to find some more guys.
That's
when I found them.
So he got you to form a new Admiration.
Right.
And then you went to high school with the four
gents. That's how I met him.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So you formed a new Admiration for Ted, and he took you to record, and how long were you together before you recorded?
Not too long. It wasn't, we had skills, you know, it was just that it's a matter of getting the right song and, you know, getting the studio.
So he actually released a record on you as Walter and the Admirations,
yes. mm-hmm.
and it was called Man Oh Man and Life of Tears. You're saying that came out around 69?
No, that came out like 60. Ooh.
That was the first thing we did. That was like
67, maybe?
Yeah, I was 16 when I wrote that thing.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, I was about 66.
So what year were you in high school when that came out?
Probably a sophomore, junior, maybe.
Yeah. Okay, well, let me play the record and we could talk some more.
Oh, man.
So this is pretty raw because this is the first record you guys did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And this is Walter and the Admirations. This track is called Man Oh Man.
Breaking
Okay, that was just Walter and the Admirations, who are up in here right now with their very first record called Man Oh Man, What Have I Done? And the audience didn't get to hear it, but they were all singing along, and they still sound really nice.
Thank you.
For the next song, I should just have you sing it instead of me playing. No, I'm joking. That record came out, you were saying, around 67, something like that?
Yeah.
So what was the, and you said you had been together for about a year, mm-hmm. and Ted Daniels took you to the studio. Mm-hmm. Do you remember where you recorded it?
We recorded it at this guy named Mark Davis. He had a studio, I think it was on like 44th and Michigan. The big, huge house over there. Mm-hmm. And he had a four-track studio in there, and we was in one bedroom singing, and he was in another studio, other bedroom recording it.
And can you say who sings each part on that record with their full names?
Clifford, Terrell Davis.
No, that's not me.
Oh, Clifford.
Clifford Terrell Frazier.
My bad. Anyway, I've been knowing him for 40 years, so I can mess it up.
Yeah, Clifford Terrell Frazier. Yeah.
He sang, me and him sung lead, and...
The Walter Smith and him, okay.
Walter Smith and Clifford.
Okay.
Frazier sung lead. And Keith?
Sang Ben.
Donaldson.
Yeah. You sang bass, right?
Yeah, I sang bass.
Brad sang baritone. Brad Donaldson sang baritone. And I guess Dave sang second tenor. Yeah.
And who wrote the record?
Clifford wrote it.
And had you ever written a song before then?
Yeah.
He wrote a lot of songs.
And that record, it's very obscure. It got pressed on a label called Lucindy, which I think a guy named Hillary Johnson had something to do with the label. You don't remember how you got to the label or who
the
name
was?
I
think I got the name Lucindy, too. I don't remember that.
I remember the story. But
see, in those days, it was a need to know basis, you know.
Yeah.
All you got to do is just come in here and sing on this mic, and don't worry about nothing else.
So your manager pretty much hooked it all up.
Yeah.
Right.
So pretty much nothing happened with the record, right? Like they didn't play it or distribute it, or did it get played?
We got some play.
Okay. So you actually heard it on the radio at the time.
I don't remember.
Okay.
That was the
B-side.
That was the
B-side.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah,
B-side
was like
Life and Tears.
Yeah, I like that side better, actually.
That's the one.
Yeah, okay.
That's
the one
we like, too.
Well, I'll play that later if we have time.
Oh, yeah.
But that Man Oh Man record, it's actually, I was telling you earlier, it's popular in England now with the collectors.
Well, we're getting ready to set up to go on tour over there. Immediately.
And we'll probably start talking like that anyway, you
know? Hey, folks. You know, shrimp on the bobby, that type of thing.
So,
Australia, man.
Australia, and English, too. Oh, okay. I got the accent, man. Work with me here. Work with me.
Some chips, you know?
I'm not going to work.
So the record, it came out around 67, you were saying?
Uh-huh.
And you didn't end up recording again until 1970, where you recorded under the Green Berets. So what happened in between that time, 1967 and 1970?
Well, we did a lot of shows, you know. We kept gigging.
We were working around town.
And then, you know, something else a lot of people don't know about us, but a lot of times we didn't have a band.
Okay.
We did acapella.
Most of our shows we did acapella without a band because, you know, bands, you know, it's like we got five attitudes here. To have another three or four, it can be, you know, a problem sometimes.
But you're saying you didn't even play in front of the house band or the club?
No, we went on the stage as Walton Admirations. That's who you saw. You didn't see no drummer, guitar.
We were strictly acapella.
And one thing that's interesting on the record, Admirations is spelled with an E Is that a typo, or did you change your
name?
It's
a typo.
Okay.
I don't know. You should
definitely be a typo.
Ted might have done something to keep it from legal, you know.
Yeah, like I was wondering.
He might have done that.
Yeah, like they didn't want you to be.
Right.
Yeah, because they
might have
legal
hassle.
Legal hassle, yeah.
I think Ted did that on purpose.
So, at the time that you were Walter and the Admirations, was the other Admirations still together, too?
Yeah.
They were together for a minute, then I think they kind of, like, started doing something else, and I think they changed their name. I'm not for sure on that. Ralph mentioned some of it to me when I talked to him about, like, a year and a half ago.
So it was confusing that there were two Admirations in Chicago, wasn't it?
Probably was for a second, and okay. That's when they put Walter and Admirations. Yeah. So it eliminated that.
So we didn't have a problem.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and Cliff, you had mentioned being with the Notations for a second.
Yeah, just for a little bit.
Before he came.
Before. And the situation
tell
about
the story.
That, there's a story about that. Because, see, what, they were like old guys. They were 24 years old.
Okay.
And I was a teenager, and they came to me and said, we just signed with Syl Johnson. We just got a new record deal, and we're getting ready to go make some records. I said, oh, you guys are too old for me. I said, I got to quit. So I said, I'll see you guys. Good luck. I wish you success. And that was the moment they commenced to kick in my butt. They chased me down the stairs, and they were beating me up, and Brad and Keith was in the car. Keith was going, oh, no, look what they're doing. And they were full of emotion and tension because they had just got a deal. And I didn't understand. I was a kid. I'm a young teenager. I'm like, poot you. I don't care. But they went on to do some great things because Brad Bobo stayed with them, and they went on and they put out I'm Still Here, and they did good things. We went on and we did our thing. We were still making records. They were making records. And I saw them at that studio. I saw Cliff at the studio, and he was like, hey, how you doing, Cliff? I said, hey, how you doing? So we still talk.
So you're not on any of the Notations records, right?
No, I quit just beforehand.
Because they actually had a record before they signed with Syl.
No.
Called Trying My Best to Find Her. You're not on that record.
No,
right?
I didn't want to do it.
So were you with them for a second? Were you still with Walter and the Admirations at that time too?
Well, that's where he told him he wasn't going to be with him because he started singing with
them.
But you were with them before the Notations, right? Were you going back and forth?
Back and forth.
Well, he was going back and forth for a minute because he, you know, well, I got to break.
I said, wow, I
got to tell him what's up. I like, yeah, do what you got to do, you know, so.
Okay.
He didn't like it, so. But he had been singing with us though before.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
About 4 or 5 months or something.
Yeah.
So you guys had graduated from school and stayed together as Walter and the Admirations for a second?
Well, then we changed our name. Like I said, we changed our name.
Because
when we got out of school, we did a thing. I think that's by that time we did this song with Lord Send Me Somebody Universal. And then after that was released, he was in Germany.
I was in Germany.
He was in
Korea.
Service.
Yeah, and he was in the Air Force.
Sam got Air Force.
And I was in the Navy, so.
So yeah. let me play Lord Send Me Somebody, and we could talk about the circumstances behind the record.
Okay.
So this is the Green Berets with their biggest hit. This is Lord Send Me Somebody.
Send me somebody. Such pain.
Okay, that was just the Green Berets with their first record as the Green Berets, and that was called Lord Send Me Somebody, and it came out on the Uni label, which was Universal. I think it came out in 1970, is that right?
Yeah, 69, 70.
Yeah.
So you had been together for 3-4 years, mm-hmm. and how did you end up getting a contract with Universal and changing your name?
Well, Andre got a package deal.
Right.
Where he had us, he had Daryl Fletcher, he had Garland Green,
he had
the Wasters.
Yeah.
He took a package.
You're talking about Andre Williams.
Yes, yeah. Andre Williams. He took a package down to L.A. and he had a good package deal, so we were part of the package.
So, but how did you get with Andre Williams?
He knew Ted Daniel was a good buddy.
They were
good buddies.
They were friends.
So was Ted still your manager at that point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And who came up with the name of Green Berets?
Andre Williams.
Andre.
Okay.
That was at the time the Vietnam War was going on, right. And the Green Beret were, you know, he said, that'll be a very catchy name.
Okay. So, but it must have been exciting to be with a bigger label all of a sudden.
No question. Yeah. Universal was, you know, they were the bomb in them days.
We walked in up to, it was on Rush Street. We walked to the second floor. We went to Studio A, and they had timbales, kettle drums, horns, strings.
Like a big band up on for orchestra. Yeah, right.
Awesome.
Big, huge studio.
Yeah.
So like you're saying they had a studio in Chicago?
Rush Street.
Okay.
Huge studio.
Yeah, you know, the Shylights were with them for a second, too, because they had a sub-label called Review.
Yeah.
Oh, I cut you off with Marshall or the Shylights. He played drums on Wait Till I Get Your Number.
Okay, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
He played drums. He played drums on a lot of records.
Yeah,
Chicago.
He's a drummer too. Yeah.
So you recorded that in Chicago. So you're saying there was a Universal Studio.
Right on Rush Street, where Hamburger Hamlet was, right there. It was right near Whiskey A Go Go. It was a happening area. Old town. It was old town.
And you went in the 69 to the studio. You went in 1969 to the studio to record?
Yeah, right upstairs on the second floor.
So the record came out, and it got a lot of radio play all of a sudden, right?
Herb Kent played the daylights out of it. He played it a lot. And
it got, did it get national play?
Yeah, because it was number one in D.C., number one in Philly, number three in St. Louis. It was all across the country. It was on
all
the
time we serving for Uncle Sugar.
Yeah, so you were one of the few groups who actually charted from Chicago nationally on the Billboard R&B charts. So you had a huge hit, and not a lot of people know your story or even know that the Green Berets are from Chicago. So,
right.
So you cut 6 sides for Uni Records, which I'll definitely be playing at least one more of them. So did you cut them all at the same time?
No.
We did them.
We went to Memphis.
Two or three at one time.
We cut two of them in stacks.
Yeah.
Stacks. We flew down to...
So the first two were in Chicago. You cut them in Chicago.
Yeah,
right.
But Rumors was recorded at the Stacks recording studio with some Stacks musicians.
Okay, that's cool. Kind of sounds like them, too. Mm-hmm. So the Lord Send Me Somebody, and the B side of that was called We Must Make Things Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who sings lead on Lord Send Me Somebody?
Walter and I sang the lead on that one.
Okay.
You sang the bass on that.
I was supposed to be doing tenor, but I said I did the bass.
I think you did the bass because Dave was sick or something. He couldn't do it for some reason.
But it was the same five, pretty much the same five guys as the Green Berets.
Right.
So then that record got a lot of play. Did you start touring?
Like I said, we were all over. He was in one
part
of the world.
So you got drafted?
Yeah.
Drafted, joined, you know.
So who, which, did all of you get drafted?
Yeah. All of us.
I got drafted.
In fact, we spent time together in Seattle, Washington.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we spent time.
we had boot camp. Me and Cliff, we had boot camp together. Yeah. We had boot camp at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly, he was across.
Bart was in the Navy. I was in the Air Force.
Okay.
Bummer.
Like
this,
yeah.
Okay. So we were, you know, taking care of our country for a while.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, what year did you all enter the service?
71.
I went 71. I just got home from 71.
You was just coming in.
We were just going in.
I got out August 1971. I went in 69.
I went in April 1971. I was in.
I was in at the end of 70.
Mm-hmm. Got out. Yeah.
Brad was in 71.
When you get out, what month you get out? 71.
71. February.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got out in August 1971. Mm-hmm.
So you guys had just cut your record, and then soon after cutting, you had to go.
So
pretty much after the first record, you guys got drafted, or
it's kind of
ironic too that the name of your group was the Green Berets.
Yes,
said you set yourself up for that.
They said, "Hey, he's got. We'll get them. What's your?"
Yourself.
Really
went real good. Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, I'll show you what the Green Berets are like.
Green Berets. You better get tough. Yeah.
So did any of you actually go overseas?
Oh yeah.
He was in Korea.
I went to Korea.
I was in Germany.
Yeah. I was in Lebanon.
I had a band over in Germany.
Oh really?
Well,
you just performed at the base, or
yeah.
You did one
too. While I was there, I got with some guys from Detroit and we had a group on my boat.
Okay.
Shows on the ship.
You don't stop singing.
Because you're in service, don't mean you stop. Yeah. You know.
So how long were you guys away for? About a year.
Two years.
No, I was three.
It was three, and I was two.
3 years for me.
That messed us all up.
So you had cut the first record around 69, 70, and then the second record, Just an Ugly Rumor. When did that get cut?
He was still away.
He cut that before we got drafted. Right.
So they cut that. We cut that around the same time.
Before they left, they cut it. Yeah, before.
So you cut two records before you all got drafted.
No. He was in the Navy.
So they had cut.
We had cut the records with me, Phil, Dave, and Keith.
Yeah, because me and Brad, I think me and you were still in.
They were still in the service.
Yeah,
so
that's what it was.
We flew down to Memphis.
Right.
Was it Memphis where it is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we flew down there and we did, the four of us, Dave, Keith, but we still tried to keep everything together.
So who's Phil?
Phil was our guitar player. He would write the music.
Arranger.
He would write the music and I would write the lyrics.
What's Phil's last name?
Davis.
So you're saying for the second record, this record, Just an Ugly Rumor, it was everyone except Walter's not on it?
No.
And Brad. Phil's saying he stepped up.
So there's four guys on it.
Yeah.
And it's everyone except Walter and Brad plus Phil.
Mm-hmm.
And so how did you end up going to Memphis to record?
Andre wanted to get a different sound. He wanted to just do something a little different, so he wanted to use some stack musicians. Some of the guys were some of his really good buddies. He took us down there, and they played that psychedelic sound.
Yeah, that's an awesome kind of psychedelic, very unique sounding.
And he was also going for, he said at that time there were a lot of tenors, a lot of songs that were being led by tenors, so he said that he wanted to push the tenor sound. That's why, you know, Smokey, Philip Bailey,
he tried to feature me, he wanted that falsetto voice.
Clifford.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like the Temptation psychedelic stuff too, but almost more smooth. Like it was a real nice sound actually. Mm-hmm. Let me play the record and we could talk about it more.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the Green Berets' second record, which is actually cut down in Memphis, and this is called Just an Ugly Rumor.
You heard of the rumor, that's where it's my bang bang, you know it can't be true. Just let an ugly rumor, baby, the only one is you. Da 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 da.
That was great. So the audience didn't get to hear, but everybody was singing along. It sounded just like on the record. So you guys still sound good. So, the record was interesting because it was very unique sounding because it had a psychedelic sound. Like it was kind of Dramatics, kind of Temptations, but kind of Chicago also. So definitely like not many, you created a unique sound on that record. So do you remember, so for who was singing lead on the record, can you say?
That's Clifford T. Fraser.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, you did a good job.
And then there were three guys on backup.
Keith,
me,
Dave, and me, and Dave. Phil, Keith, Dave, and myself.
And do you remember that you said that there was actually, you had some of the Stax musicians, like were there some of the Bar Kays, or do you remember? Okay.
Yeah.
So you just flew down there and flew back?
Well, we flew down. Yeah. Flew down there. Walked down the big street. I'd amaze me. Our young selves having a good time.
Yeah. Oh wow, we're here. Stack. Look.
Sam and Dave. Sam and Dave.
Did you meet any of the Stax people down there?
Well, Andre was very secretive. He didn't want us getting out into the mainstream because they were doing things the kids weren't supposed to do.
Okay.
They were somewhat cooters.
They were older guys, and we were sheltered.
Responsible.
Andre was very responsible. He took very good care of us.
So had Andre become your manager by that point?
No, he was like our father figure, our mentor, and the guy that we didn't want to like.
You were 18 then, right? 18,
19? Yeah, we were still teenagers. Yeah.
And that record, did it get any play on the radio?
Not in Chicago too often. No, I think this was right when, I don't know, we were drafted.
I don't know.
We got drafted.
Yeah, that's that.
We went straight to the service. We don't know.
So that must have hurt your ability to promote the record because you couldn't tour off of it.
They wouldn't play.
Knew who we were.
Right.
Yeah,
couldn't do
everybody's
it.
Everybody's gone one way or another, you know.
They didn't have the internet and MTV and music videos and all that.
Yeah.
Unless you did a live show somewhere
or
did an appearance.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a public appearance. Nobody knew who you were.
But I got to tell you this. What really made the harmony so special was the three brothers, the Keith, the Dave, and the Brad, and with the color and the flavor of me and Walter, that added a little extra touch. But we were very unique. There was nobody like us. Like I said, we did everything a cappella. We didn't need no music.
We just got to the point where we said we're not going to have a band. We was getting a lot of gigs.
Yeah.
We just gigging. I mean, you know, over in town, we singing.
Singing.
You know, without a band.
Did you guys have nice suits and choreography and stuff?
Well, yeah, we danced.
We danced a little bit, but not a lot. We just stood. We had maybe most mics that were there was maybe two mics.
So we had to work sometime
around
with
one
two.
Mic. That was our strength, and that was we did. We went with our strength.
We did this gig at called the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Which was on with 73rd
and 71st in
Chicago.
Yeah, when we had got back together, I was hosting. I was working with the legendary Bernie Mac. He was one of our.
Wait a minute, you're going too fast.
Oh,
we haven't did Velvet Hammer yet. Oh. He called me and stuff.
Oh, well, he got more stuff to do on us.
Yeah, you're way ahead of the
story. Oh, way ahead of us. I mean, we were singing there.
Yeah, true.
We were singing there every week. True. We were one of the top acts.
No, so by that time I just came back to California.
Yeah, okay.
So
we were the top act.
You actually had cut one more record for Uni called I Gotta Be Loved, which is a really nice ballad with Too Young. And actually, one thing I want to ask about, too, is the flip of Just an Ugly Rumor is a song called Give Me a Try.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got a difference. It's got a bubblegum, almost Jackson 5.
Yeah, right, right.
So is that what you were going for on that, too? You wanted to have like a...
Yeah, I guess you could say
a B-side, we were thinking.
Yeah.
And then the next record was a really nice ballad called I've Gotta Be Loved. So do you remember when that was cut?
Well, it was the other side that would supposedly be the hit.
The Too Young side.
No, wait.
It was Too Young and I've Gotta Be Loved.
I don't know.
I don't remember.
Gotta Be Love might have been. No.
I think Too Young is marked as the A side, but I Gotta Be Love is the better side for me. It's like a really nice
ballad.
Yeah,
the orchestra.
Yeah.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a side. Remember they flew that guy in to arrange this song from New York?
Right.
I forgot this guy to come in to arrange this song for those tracks that we did for that.
I don't have the record in front of me. I would be able to look it up. Yeah. So that record, were you back from the service when you cut that, or what was the story with that?
Yeah, we just got back. Yeah, we were getting back together again. Yeah,
because I think
when we did Call Me, we cut that CBS.
Yeah,
we had just got out. I think everybody kind of just got out when we did Call Me, right?
Well, Call Me was like 76.
No, that was later. That was later.
I'm thinking something else.
So members were like going in and out of the service, but Too Young, most of you, I mean, when you did I Gotta Be Loved, most of you were back from the service already?
Yeah, everybody was back on that session.
So there was a few year period where the Green Berets records were coming out. Like the first one came out around 70.
And we didn't know.
Right.
And then the other ones were coming out 71, 72, something like that.
They had to keep going, I guess.
Yeah.
So then there was another, and that one didn't get play either, did it? Much play, I Gotta Be Loved?
From what I know, that was one of ours.
That sounded really good.
Yeah, that was a good record.
That was a good session.
I hope to get time to play that, too, because you have a lot of good records.
That was a good one. I like that.
So then one thing is then soon after that you cut a record as The High Society. And it was called I Can't Believe.
Yeah.
What's the story with that? Why did you cut a record under a different name? And
I think this is a feel.
I was still on.
Huh?
I was still in the service too. Oh, okay. Brad, Walter,
Dave, and Daryl Fletcher.
Daryl Fletcher.
Daryl Fletcher.
He did background on that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
So, and that record, did it come out before I Gotta Be Loved, or was it after all that?
After.
Okay.
Because, see, then I think we had kind of stopped doing stuff with Andre and them, and then Phil, this was Phil's kind of like project. It was like one of his babies, you know. He said, yeah, I want you to sing something, blah, blah, blah. He even put it in a key. I said, man, I can't sing. This is kind of a little too high. He kept pushing me, singing in that key. So I eventually sung in that key.
Okay.
Yeah.
So who came up with the name High Society?
I think it was a little everybody on that one.
Okay. Well, let me play that record and we could talk some more.
Okay.
So this is High Society, and this track is called I Can't Believe.
Thank you.
Okay, that was just the High Society with I Can't Believe. And if you're just tuning in, I have members of the Green Berets, who are also the High Society, and Walter and the Admirations, and the Velvet Hammer up in here talking about their story. So on that record, who sings lead?
Me.
Walter. And who sings backup on the record?
Daryl Fletcher, Brad Donaldson, David Donaldson. That was it, huh?
Yeah.
Feel that
yeah.
thing? No, we wouldn't let him do that. Keep playing guitar. Blinker, blinker.
And Cliff was away in the service at that time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the group lineup at different points just changed based on who was in and out of Chicago.
Yeah, the main nucleus, though, pretty much stays the same. When they left, you know, we didn't really add nothing. When me and Brad wasn't here, they didn't really add nobody, you know. Just probably split. Somebody helped us sing some background vocals.
Nobody permanent.
Yeah, it went on permanent.
On a fill-in basis.
Constant was that Phil Davis, he was the only child, so he didn't get drafted.
Yeah,
so we had our
we had to get our play.
Yeah,
we always had to get to our play. He wasn't going nowhere.
So that was pretty much Phil's project, right? High Society.
Yeah, that was his, yeah.
So what was the story? He just came up with the idea of the song and the group.
Well, he got to the point where he was like excelling with his talent, I guess you could say. Cause
he had a studio at home.
He wanted to do his own stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And through him, that's how we hooked up with Mark.
Yeah.
Him and Mark was Davis, the guy who produced Man on Land.
Okay, so Phil, so you're saying you recorded it at Phil's studio at his house?
No,
that's where we would write.
Right, rehearse.
We went to that,
I think it was on 12th Street somewhere, I think.
That was on 71st.
Was it? I thought it was in the north.
It was a
north
little
side.
Studio on the south side of the street. It was in the south, I mean, it was a studio on 71st Street.
No, you went there.
No, I came home on leave. I heard him mixing. I was home on leave, and he took me there.
Oh, okay.
And he actually played a lot of the instruments on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he played bass, guitar,
drums.
I think he played rhythm.
He played
rhythm.
Played drums too. Yeah.
Yeah, he played drums.
Yeah. And he wrote the record.
Just like Stevie Wonder, but he wasn't blind.
Yeah, pretty much. And you know, he played all that to make the music up. But then, when he got his studio,
he
got guys that he got another drummer and everything. Yeah, but as far as just to get it down and you know, to track what he wanted, he did almost of it himself.
Boy, couldn't dance a lick.
But he was a musical genius.
Couldn't dance a lick.
He couldn't do the twists.
Yeah, two left twists.
And it came out on the USA record label out of Chicago, which I know they.
Shylock.
No, that was the second version of it. The Velvet Hammer came out on
the 12-inch.
The 12-inch is Shyba.
Yeah, but the original version came out on USA as a High Society.
Right.
Okay, and
right,
it was, yeah. You know, like it had a red, white, and blue label.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And there was a Chicago label, but I think they took in a lot of licensed-in production, so maybe he produced it and just licensed it to the label, probably.
Probably so, yeah.
So did that get played in Chicago, the Can't Believe?
A little bit.
Okay.
I recollect. I remember hearing it on the radio. I don't know if it got. I don't think we got a lot of play outside. You know, maybe our region. Maybe that was it. But I don't think it went like national.
And were you guys actually performing ever as the High Society, or was just a name on the record?
Pretty much a name on the record, because I think we were doing.
What did you put the guys and dolls?
We did a gig with the guys and dolls.
Yeah, were we the High Society?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then soon after that. So when did that record come out? Maybe 73, something like that. Because soon after, in 1974, you cut a record as the Velvet Hammer. So how did that happen? How did you change your name or form a new group? What happened?
Well, he didn't want High Society was Phil's thing. You know?
That was Phil's thing. Yeah.
So Andre and them wanted
Phil to move to L.A.
Yeah, he moved to L.A.
Phil jumped in his car, drove off to L.A., and didn't come back.
Dirty rat.
So,
but Andre, he said, okay, well, he says, I like this name. It was Andre was the Schnitznik.
Yeah, that's how he was kind of
running. He says, I'm running this, and I want you guys to be the Velvet Hammer. I like the sound of it.
Smooth but hard, you know.
So, Andre, you weren't with him for a second, then you got back with Andre? Is that what happened?
Yeah. Well, what it was, we was doing it before, it's like him and / Ted. Both of them were like kind of
buddies.
Yeah, so, dealing with our situation. So. You know, but then after a while, Andre just, we got back with him.
Yeah, he was,
you know.
Okay.
He was pushing us a lot.
So he's like, let's form the Velvet Hammer. So do you remember how that? So were you all back from the service at that point?
Oh yeah, everybody was out working and stuff then. By then.
So then the Velvet Hammer, the first record that he released on you guys, came out on the Polydor label in 1974. It was called I'm the Rock.
I'm the Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the story behind that? Like, how long had you been together as the Velvet Hammer?
Well, as the Velvet Hammer, I'd say probably a couple of years.
Rick Williams.
Rick Williams.
His name's on the record,
Rick
too.
Williams, yeah, he was one of our sponsors.
He was a financier of our sessions and everything.
Yeah.
He and Andre were really tight. And so they liked the sound that we had.
Guess you say Rick was the money man.
In fact, Rick, the stuff that we had been working on, Rick sponsored to come back and redo.
Okay. So do you remember where you recorded that, the On the Rock?
I think that was at Chicago, wasn't it?
I don't know where that was.
That was where we recorded the rest of that stuff. I think it was at Polydor.
I thought we did something. I don't know.
Yeah, it was on the Polydor label.
Yeah, I think that's the studio.
I don't know where the studio was. I don't even remember
that. It was downtown.
Tanglewood.
We recorded it at Tanglewood. Tanglewood Studio.
Where was that?
It was on Grand Avenue.
And that record got released, and did it get any play?
Not as much as it did when the album came out.
Yeah.
I think the album got more play.
So you actually ended up cutting a whole album, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's the story behind that? Whose idea was it to cut a whole album?
Well, Andre had talked to Rick, you know. Mm-hmm. Rick was the money man, and Andre was the man to see how things make things happen for the money man. So I guess he had told him about it. He wanted to do an album on us. That's pretty much how that went down, you know. And then we had some stuff we had cut, and then there was another guy named,
Carl Tarleton?
Yeah. He had a tune, I think it was on that album, you know.
And Andre and Carl had a production company called JoJo Productions, and that was the production company on your Uni Records also, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was in conjunction with Joanne Garrett.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize it was named after her.
So
that record, you also had changed up your sound a little bit, right? Like previously you did more ballads and you got kind of funkier.
Well, we added, Andre insisted that we add two new people, Andre and Carl. So the Velvet Hammer grew.
We were like take 7 by 8.
Velvet Hammer grew. Now the Velvet Hammer consisted of the Admirations and
Carl
and Andre. So now we're a whole new act now. We're the Velvet Hammer now with two new people. And so we sang background for Andre.
Got 6-7 people on stage singing.
Yeah.
So there were seven guys. Did all seven guys sing on all the tracks?
No. Not all of them. Sometimes they did and sometimes they didn't.
But you were still just a vocal. You weren't a self-contained band and group, right?
No.
You were just a vocal group?
Just a big vocal
group. Now all the harmonies and stuff we did. Yeah. But okay. like lead vocals, Andre did some. You know, Clifford did some and Carl did some. But mostly it was Clifford.
Andre didn't do no background.
No, he didn't do no background.
No, that was our.
He just did
our
leads.
Couldn't do that.
They couldn't do no background.
Andre.
Okay. Stick to the lead, buddy. Love you, babe, but do the lead.
This is about the time. Andre was trying to do a lot of stuff that sounded like, was it Wow? What group was that? Ohio Players. He was trying to give a sound kind of like the Ohio Players.
But that was what was happening at that time, too.
It was self-contained acts, big groups. Earth, Wind & Fire was on stage with a lot of people.
You know, theatrics.
Everybody had a lot of people on stage.
Right.
You know, and that's what he was going after.
So the album ended up coming out on a label called Susie. Mm-hmm. Whose label was that?
That was
Archie B.
Collins.
My sister-in-law. Archie B.'s wife. He named the label after his wife, Susie.
Yeah.
So who was Archie B. Collins?
He was my brother-in-law, and he was
an entrepreneur, barbecue house. And barbecue sauce,
Archie B. Mumbo Sauce, that was his main
name. And he had three barbecue houses, one in was it Gary? Yeah. And two in Chicago.
Two in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. One on 71st Street, one on
Halsted.
76 in Halsted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he had a bunch of restaurants and it was trying to venture into the music business?
I'm doing this here. Well, let me go ahead and...
He was trying. You know, Andre went to him. Andre approached him with the project.
He had a way of getting the hold of people who had money to do things for him.
Okay.
That was his
called production.
And he's still doing it.
So they release an album and a single from the album. The single was called Happy and Party Hardy.
Yeah.
So I have the single here. Which side should I play?
Happy.
Oh, okay. Happy. I'm going to play Happy and then we'll talk a little bit more about the album.
We had two versions of Party Hardy. I don't know if you got the one with the background vocals. That's the one that I like the best. Because the one without the background vocals is just me on the lead and music. But
I have whatever's on the single, so I'll play Happy and then we can talk some
that's
more.
That's very good.
So this is the Velvet Hammer with Happy. The audience just now got to hear a little bit of your harmony.
Which was nice. Thank you very much.
So that record came out, I think, in 1976. So they had cut a whole album on you guys as the Velvet Hammer and had released that single. Did the single get any play?
Hardly none.
Probably none. I'm thinking when the album came out, it was a lot of play. Any play we got most of was then. You know, when the LP came out.
Yeah, Andre was having some financial problems, some internal problems with what was going on, and he couldn't get a deal. I think they wanted him to do certain things, but he refused. He had a concept of what he wanted to do, the direction he wanted us to take, and the companies wouldn't accept it. So
they wouldn't go
the way he wanted to. So he was a very cocky and a very proud man. He flipped him a hand. Without the other four fingers.
Okay. So one thing that's interesting about your album is that it came out with two covers.
Yeah.
What's the story? Why was the album released with two different album covers?
The cover with the girl on it, that was Rick Williams' girlfriend.
It was?
Yeah. And the other one that I designed was the with the Velvet Hammer on the red label.
I
drew that. Because he says, well, we don't want any controversy. You know, he tried to appease Rick, I think.
Yeah, spending that money.
Right.
So he didn't want Rick to be mad that his girlfriend was a model on the cover.
Yeah, she was laying
on a green couch and looking all seductive and everything.
She's in the air.
It made me live.
Disgusting.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It was crazy.
So you didn't get much play off of the album or the single, you were saying. But it is a collectible album now, especially people overseas are looking for it. So did you guys do shows as the Velvet Hammer?
Yeah, we did some shows at Velvet Hammer.
Yeah, we did a few.
So did you have a band together for the shows?
Yeah, we did. We had Ernest. We had Ernest and Melvin and...
Kenny Martin.
We had a three-piece band. It was real funky. They played for us. We did the Velvet Hammer show. In fact, we opened up for Cannonball Adderley. Yeah.
When was that?
What was that on
at the High Chaparral?
At the High Chaparral on Stony Island.
When was that?
We had some time. Come on.
We'll say 77, maybe.
Okay.
The time frame.
It sounds good.
Yeah, we don't remember. Call. We're old. No, we're not. No.
Everybody in here got grandkids, maybe except him.
Was your stage show similar? That like as the Green Berets, did you switch up how you did your shows?
We did a lot of cover tunes.
We did cover tunes. Cover we make our own routines and stuff. You know, we put our own feel in it. I mean, it's all if it was Velvet Hammer High Society, whatever it was. We always put our stuff on it. You know, made it sound fit for us.
We brought the house down with the OJ's tune, You Are My Sunshine.
Yeah.
They called us back several times and seen that.
So you said you left the label because Andre had some dispute with the label.
Well, it was some
they went on the same page.
It was some things going on that we weren't privy to.
Okay.
But Andre was really trying hard to push this because this was his pet project. He's still pushing it, he's selling overseas.
Okay.
This was his pet project, and it's been his lifelong pet project. For sure, because otherwise, why would he still be pushing it?
And one thing that's interesting is there was one more Velvet Hammer record released later, but it was released in 1979 by Phil Davis, and it was that I Can't Believe record on the Chilo.
That was his
baby. That was Phil's baby. He loved it. Phil started that song.
So one thing I'm not sure, when I listened to the record, I'm not sure if he just took the old song and remixed it, or did you actually go and re-record the song?
We recorded it. The version that we did, we recorded. Now, he might have mixed it.
He
might have did that, but, you know.
But it's not the same recording as the High Society record. You guys re-recorded, I Can't Believe, as the Velvet Hammer. Is that right?
No.
So he took the High Society record and just remixed it. Because I was listening to it, and it sounds kind of like the same record, and he doubled it.
It is. It's added something.
He might have put some
I think he doubled up the vocals and added up.
You know.
So but pretty much that's just the High Society
record
re-release.
Right.
He said he had Velvet, he probably took the Velvet.
He knew it was the same guys.
He can get more of the Velvet Hammer versus High Society.
Yeah, he knew it was the same fellas.
And he was living in L.A. at the time?
Yeah.
Because I was wondering about the label name because it looks like it's Chi L.A.
Shyla.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be Chicago, L.A.
Yeah, that's
like Shylight, Shyla.
Chicago, L.A.,
but nothing happened with that record, right? He just pressed it. And, but he pressed it a 12-inch also,
he
right?
He spent his own money on that.
He pressed a 12-inch disc on it.
So
and one side is instrumental, and the other side is the song.
So, but Andre had absolutely nothing to do with that.
No, that was all Phil's baby.
That was all his.
He was trying to get away.
So how long did the group stay together after that?
Well, like I said, we know... All this time, we were still together. We might have changed our name, but we were still the group, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing that just changed, really, is our name.
So did you guys change your name again?
Let's see, from High Society?
No, from the Velvet Hammer.
I think we kind of stuck with that as a...
No, we became the Aberrations again.
That's right. So did
Aberrations again.
We went back to the beginning. Back to square one.
So were you together throughout the 80s?
Mm-hmm.
We were doing the last
no. Well, they yeah they were. I was in Cali.
He was in Cali. Okay.
When did you move to California?
79.
Okay, so were you
I
there?
Back in 89.
So you knew Phil there over there?
Oh yeah, I knew him before I left.
Okay.
And then I ended up getting in touch with him while I was out there.
Okay. Did you stay involved with music at all when you were there?
Yeah, I did some stuff with other people. You know, did recordings with them. You know.
What are some of the things that you did?
It was just like some mostly some tracks. He just had me burn some. I don't even know the names of the songs, but
I never get to hear him because he went somewhere else that he recorded them in L.A. He took them somewhere else. I think it was Arizona.
You're saying Phil recorded
them? No, not Phil. This is some other people that I met in L.A.
Who recorded? Do you remember who they were?
No, the one guy, his name was Alan, and there was another guy named Eugene. And Gene wrote a lot of stuff, and Alan, he couldn't sing it. So, you know, Eugene, I hadn't been knowing Eugene like 7 years, and he didn't even know that I sing.
Okay.
Until one day he just heard me. I said, I'm going to hit something, you know. I didn't know you do that, man. I'm like, yeah, man, I've been doing that from since I was a little kid.
So he recorded you, but you don't know if it got released or anything?
No, because a little after he recorded, I think I came back here.
Okay, so and then the rest of the guys were together performing in Chicago?
Mm-hmm. Well, we were a little bit. We weren't performing a lot. I had started doing theater.
Yeah, I started doing theater.
How'd you get involved with that?
Well, one of the guys that took my place temporarily, Maurice Rayford, mm-hmm. And there was an audition at the ETA Theater for a play called The Regal Theater, and they were looking for singers. So we all went up there, and we got different parts. I did Jerry Butler, he did Bubba and the Pips, and started doing the show, and it was a big hit to play. And next thing I know, I'm doing another play after that, and another one.
What year was that?
Oh, don't ask.
Was it in the mid-80s?
It was in the 80s, about 85, because that's the year. 85 was when I started doing theater.
And you've been involved with theater since then?
Well, it transcended from theater to movies.
What movies were you in?
Barbershop. U.S. Marshal.
You're the third person I've interviewed that's been in Barbershop.
Oh, well, yeah. Last week, there's a whole lot of Chicago actors.
Last week, Rex Alexander, mm-hmm. who I interviewed last week, was in Barbershop, yeah. And Lorenzo from the Mandels was in Barbershop.
Lorenzo was a very good Lorenzo, he played the big guy. He went into the shop. I remember. He's a real nice fella. Mm-hmm. I like Lorenzo a lot.
But I got two Barbershop interviews in a row. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it was a... They were looking. We're looking for black actors to be in this movie.
Here I am. Huh?
And then they whenever they come here, and then that's the case, they get all of the regulars.
Okay. And what other movies did you say you were in?
U.S. Marshals.
Okay.
Hoodlums, Natural Born Killers, a couple episodes of Prison Break.
The show that just finished?
Yeah.
I'm going to buy the DVD and look for you.
No, I had a little bit, you know, one of those three-word parts, you know, excuse me.
enough to get money.
Individuals. Yeah.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
You all right, man?
Doctor, y'all.
Yeah. You all right, Sarah, man? Are you okay? You know, those kind of parts.
So you're not in, like, a prison fighter?
No. Only, I told you a prison fight in Natural Born Killers. We shot that out in Joliet. I was beating up a guard, punching him and beating him up.
Beat up a guard?
Yeah, I didn't like him. they showed me. You don't recognize me. You see this much of my hand. But I'm beating him up. Beating him up against the wall.
And have any of the other guys been involved with music since then?
Music? Oh, I'm in ministry now.
Yeah.
Okay.
My Faith Christian Center. I'm one of the ministers of music there.
Okay.
So that's what I've been doing.
So do you lead a choir or what?
Yeah, happens? I'm in the Anointed Voices.
Okay.
And the Vessels of Praise. So I'm in two groups.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing.
How long have you been doing that?
I've been doing that since 2002.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what I've been doing vocally.
Does a good job.
Okay.
Yes. I went to see him a few times. It's wonderful.
And are you involved with music, or have you been involved with music since the 80s?
Yeah, I've been singing in church choirs, and we were singing with me and Walt were singing in some of the restaurants in the northwest side with another friend of ours. He's singing now with the Drifters now. Ed Collins.
Okay.
Yeah, we were singing. We started doing a little act, but now he's with the Drifters, and we're looking for another guy.
Yep. So when was the last time the Velvet Hammer performed? Was it the mid-80s, pretty much?
Yeah.
Okay.
Today.
This is your
Velvet Union Tour.
Let me play another record, which you did was really good, the Green Berets, I Gotta Be Loved, and we can talk a little more. So this is the Green Berets with I Gotta Be Loved.
Thank you.
Okay, that was just the Green Berets with I've Gotta Be Loved. That's the last record they released under the name the Green Berets. And who sang lead on that record?
That was a young Cliff.
Cliff 30 years younger Cliff.
were the other four members present on that record?
Yeah, that was everybody.
So that was the five. That was the original lineup of the five guys.
Yeah.
And one thing that's interesting is, didn't another artist also do that record?
Joanne Garrett. She recorded it first. And then Andre, who was good friends with her, he said, I'd like to have you guys do this song.
And you guys did a nice version of it.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever do any backup work for any other artists?
Matt Simmons.
Joanne Garrett.
Cool.
So are you on record, like on backup on Joanne Garrett Records?
A couple of them, yeah.
You don't know which ones?
No.
No, she had to come in.
It was a whirlwind tour.
Yeah, we did that.
Yeah, the book and me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did that one.
It was a world. We just did as much as we could. Yeah, wherever we think. Whenever. Because we were trying.
Because I know that the Dells sing on at least one of her records.
Yeah.
So, and you back Max Simmons. You remember what Max Simmons' record you sang?
Oh, he's a blues artist. He knew my father. Him and my father played blues together.
Yeah.
And he was doing some Stevie Wonder tunes. Boogie Woogie Rag Woman.
Yeah.
He was doing like, blow, Mac, blow, you know. He had his own studio in his
basement.
And he said, you guys can sing. You know, he had us doing a background on everything he wanted to do.
And you guys were telling me before that you had something to do with Disco Lady.
We did the
upbeat hand claps on Disco Lady. We were down
in Detroit.
In Detroit.
And we didn't, you know, he said, I need some hand claps. So we just started clapping. So then one day, you know, I'm just going to say, that's that record that we, you know, like, we clapping on that, you know.
Yeah, you know, they owe us for that. We didn't get paid.
We didn't get paid for a hand clap.
Time, man.
Hey, you guys, you're in the studio. Want to do some hand claps?
Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
So why were you in Detroit for that record?
We were about to sign a deal with Don Davis.
Right.
Okay, who he was producing Disco Lady.
He was also working with the Dramatics.
Yeah.
And Millie Jackson.
He had a few groups.
So the you're saying the Velvet Hammer were going
to
sign with
Don? We were getting ready to sign, yeah, but there was something going on
we didn't know about. We didn't know because, you know, we
and
were young.
Fell through.
They're not going to tell us everything, you know.
Was that before you signed with Suzy Records? You almost signed with Don Davis? And okay, well, and today, Cliff, you have a group together now, is that right?
Yeah, we are a cover band. We do a lot of Motown songs. We're called the Moods. It's Bernard Mixon, Ollie Bowles, Maurice Rayford, and myself. And we have two wonderful musicians, John Talmadge and Daryl Echols, is our bass player.
And like, what types of places do the Moods perform?
We perform a lot of Italian restaurants up in Naperville. We do Jilly's, we do, in Crystal Lake we work, we went to Jamaica last year, we travel all around, we do a lot of private parties and corporate events.
And you do like Motown, what type of stuff do you do?
We do stuff, the Temptations, with you know, the Temptations, Four Tops, Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, we do Earth, Wind & Fire, we do a lot of stuff, we even do the blues, we even do a little bit of country, if we're asked.
And the rest of the members, you're involved singing in church mainly today?
Mm-hmm. And we like you said, Brad said, me and him trying to get another guy.
Yeah, we're looking for a lead singer.
Another lead singer.
Okay.
Lead and background.
Yeah. To do a similar type of of cover band show?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
A little different, but yeah.
I'm trying to get them on the circuit with us, with the Moods.
Right.
I'm employed now.
Okay.
With them guys, and you know, I can't just jump out and go, oh yeah, I quit, guys, I'll see you.
Did that already, remember?
Yeah, I did that already. Got
beat up.
It won't have to happen
now.
No.
But if we go over in London, he's gone. Don't worry about it.
If I don't, they'll beat me up.
Okay, well, first of all, I have to say thanks so much for coming down and telling your story. You guys had a very interesting story. And do you guys have any last words for the listening audience?
Keep listening to Walton Aberrations, High Society, Velvet Hammer,
Green Beret. And come out and see the Moods.
Yeah, come see the Moods, and then come see the three gents. That'll be me, Brad, and this new guy.
You want to get in touch with us? You know how to do that.
See this man right here. Love your land.
Okay, yeah, people could contact me through the internet. And the Moods have a website they could search for, too, right? Okay, cool. So thanks again. And this last record we're going to play is the A-side of the very first record. This is Walter and the Admirations with Life of Tears.